Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Primarily connected to finances. But for me, when I think about the awful state of the team right now, and that doesn't just stop at 32-50, that goes and extends to, the GM is going to continue to get to run this draft. The GM, it seems, if you look at the fact that the new manager is not an interim manager and that a new GM being brought on would probably want to bring his own manager in, the GM seems safe for next year. All these the little factors, a guy who has ruined and butchered the rebuild is getting to try another crack at it yet again. They all come back to one thing, and that is an owner, in my opinion, who has said more in the last couple of years about wanting to win than we've heard him say in a very long time, has said those things, that has not at times taken the decisive and sometimes uncomfortable actions necessary to actually achieve that goal. And what makes that even worse for Bob Nutting is that in the past when he did decide it was time with Clint Hurdle and that it was time with Neil Huntington and that ultimately it was time with Frank Coonerly, he didn't hesitate to make those moves. He made them and he paid guys to go away. He paid the money. He bought out multiple deals. And in this case, with the situation more urgent, you have Paul Skeens. You have to try to build. You've got to take advantage of this opportunity. It's a golden goose that lays golden eggs. Don't throw them in the trash. The best he's been able to muster as an owner in terms of decision-making has been to deal in half measures. There's no justification for Ben Cherington still having his job. There's no argument to be made that the problem was Derek Shelton and Derek Shelton alone. But the Pirates have conducted business like that is the only thing that really was wrong. The owner has also gone on the record and said, I think I've provided them with what they need. Now, sometimes it comes down, and I'm paraphrasing in this part, you got to just go out and perform. He hasn't performed his duties as an owner well enough. He's allowed a guy in Ben Cherington who took whatever money he was allocated this offseason and spent a good chunk of it on analysts to try to help the Pirates get an edge in the margins. To say nothing of the fact that every team's looking for those edges, and a lot of them are spending even more money than the Pirates are on those types of analysts. He has let that guy stay at his post despite there being an absence of 1 ounce of evidence that he deserves to. Here are the good moves I can think of that Ben Cherington has made. Skeens instead of Dylan Cruz, good job. The Bailey Falter trade. I start struggling at that point. Like to identify a truly great and hugely significant move. The owner's indecisiveness is the problem here. The owner's unwillingness to confront the reality that this has failed with Ben Cherington and that he needs to start over, even though he'd be starting over from a much better position because the person to succeed Ben Cherington would be inheriting Paul Skeens. He has not come to grips with that, and that is very frustrating to me. And that is, I think, more than anything else, the thing that at a global level is holding this team back from at least trying to make the kind of changes that might yield positive results. I'll say it again. There's no reason Ben Cherington should still be on the job. There's no reason, there's no justification for him to be conducting a draft and be running a trade deadline in a month plus, and then doing the draft, or having done, you know, having done anything. And yet he will. He'll do all these things. He'll get to trade players here. He'll get to try to get what he can for Mitch Keller. He'll get to keep doing his job when he shouldn't. And for me, that's the biggest reason this team's 18 games under 500. That's the biggest reason this team is going nowhere fast. That's the biggest reason this team can't build an offense, because they're letting the same guy who's failed at it over and over again keep trying. 412-928-9370. That's the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line. A personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. How about you, Don? How do you feel about it? Because I know it's easy to just cite the money factor and the financial factor, but man, like that's a thing that I know we could always fight against. It doesn't take a certain amount of money to have the gumption to make hard decisions, and I feel like Bob is just shying away from it.
Well, coming into the season and before Derek Shelton even got let go, as bad as we may have thought Derek Shelton was at his job, I at least stayed consistent myself in saying that I thought Ben Cherington was worse at his than what Shelton was as the team's manager. It just so happens with the way baseball goes, with the way sports normally go, the coach or manager is going to be the first guy to go in that equation. I mean, he really, outside of the two moves you cited, Falter and Skeens, he hasn't done anything that could be a true impact for the team. And even if you want to put out an olive branch and say Andrew McCutchen, that's more of a Bob Nutting move than a Ben Cherington move. That was made very clear. So no,
that's a great point. The actual most consistent offensive player they've had this year was essentially directly acquired by the owner.
Yeah, because I feel like we had enough people tell us, and I think Andrew McCutchen himself made it clear.
He told us on our show. He just straight up said it was me and Bob basically getting together and doing this.
Yeah, so it's not like GMBC played any sort of factor in him coming back. Like even that move, as little as it may seem in the grand scheme, even that one move, he can't even take credit for. But we're going to go into another trade deadline where we have to worry in any move that is made, oh, how is this one going to get screwed up? What kind of cruddy return are we going to see on this when we see other teams around baseball who may also be selling? They'll end up finding their way to a great deal. When is that time going to happen for the Pirates? Like, we've cited that Juan Soto blockbuster from years ago, and I know that sort of trade isn't really on the horizon, but I feel like we have never really felt that way as a fan base after they've traded any sort of significant player. Like, I'm not just specifically saying this trade deadline coming up, and if they trade Keller or Bednar or both of them together. I just feel like as Pirates fans, we've never come away from them trading a key player and feeling and reaping the benefits that the Nationals have.
Well,
so far.
I think that's hard to come away from those deals immediately feeling that way. You still have to see the players come up. But, yeah, I mean, there's not a trade you can cite where the Pirates have dealt a major asset and then seen multiple players come back in that deal and become hugely productive, like obviously productive guys, where you could actually justify the trade on merits and say that was a smart thing to do. It's also definition of insanity type of stuff here. And I guess I would also love to know, like, what kind of case was Ben Cherington making to Bob Nutting? Did he even have to make a case to keep his job when Shelton got fired? Like, was Bob even... Because I think Bob, there was reporting out there that he was ticked off enough, and this is where he felt like most relatable to the fans. He was mad enough after last season to consider blowing the whole thing up and got talked out of it. Then if he was that close to doing it the first time, when they started 12-26, that should have been it. And yet, not only do you not get that, you get Ben Cherington being the guy making the press release, like being quoted in the press release. Everything they did when they actually fired Shelton telegraphed the idea that Ben, not only is Ben Cherington not in any kind of hot water, he's like quite safe. Usually the owner, if he felt like he needed to maybe make a statement kind of tacitly to the general manager, would say it wasn't good enough from Derek Shelton. None of that. He let the chain of command kind of stay in place. And I just, for me, that's a tough pill to swallow, because I feel like right now with Paul Skeens, you owe it to yourself as a franchise. You certainly owe it to your fans to act with more urgency. He's talked about urgency so many times, and yet the decisions in this one particularly, they just smack of anything but. It smacks of complacency, if anything. Donnie, we have an interesting thing happening, by the way, on the side here. You want to know what it
Packed
is?
House.
No, we have an interesting thing happening with TRT. Now, we've got the running joke that's gone on for a long time that ponies poll questions do huge numbers, and mine never do as far as votes. We have Total Request Thursday, the poll question out there for what we talk about at 5:30. Right now, we might have a stunning winner here. Aaron Rodgers, the Pirates at the halfway point, the NHL draft, and the Simpsons. The NHL draft winning right now, Don. Did you ever think Do you ever think that would happen, Chalooch?
I did not.
How was your talk with Jesse Marshall last night?
Very good. So if we do talk about the NHL draft,
oh, you'll be primed and ready, brother.
I'll have some contributions for you.
Did you ask him who the first person to ever put him on the air was?
Oh, dang it. I did not.
That's all right. A friend of the show texted me that he asked him that exact question when you and I were talking about it yesterday, and that Jesse instantly responded, Chris Muller.
See, he remembers.
Pepperidge Farm remembers, bro.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Rivers Casino Sportsbook, Chris Muller, PM team. Go out to the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And that's where we find Steelers beat writer for the Post-Gazette. That would be Ray Fittipaldo. Ray is brought to you by LGKG, the born and raised Western PA injury attorneys who take your personal injury cases personally. Ray, were you riveted like I was? Were you just glued to your phone or your computer monitor for all 41 minutes of Aaron Rodgers on Pat McAfee?
No, Chris. It's summertime, and I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities at 1 p.m. every Tuesday during the season to be locked in on McAfee. I was not this past week.
Did you happen to hear anything after the fact, clips from Aaron Rodgers? Okay.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. And yeah, honestly, Chris, a lot of it was what, you know, Aaron told us in his little gathering he did with us at minicamp. So I know there was a headline there about this was probably his last season, but I think we all sort of knew that when he signed that 1 year deal to begin with.
It did get me, though, thinking, Ray, when he said, yeah, this is pretty sure this is it, I think was the way he framed it. And the way he sounded certainly makes it think like he's more than pretty sure, like this really is done. I'll admit, Ray, and you know me pretty well, so you know that what I'm about to say is going to be stunning. It actually made me feel better about how this might go, because I was thinking back to Russell Wilson's time here last year, and Fields to a similar extent, although in a different place in his career. And I think there could be some clarity here between quarterback and coach that didn't exist last year, because Russell Wilson was playing for what he thought was another mega deal potentially. Fields was trying to prove that he belonged. I almost feel like Rodgers only wanting to go out on better terms than he did last year with the Jets, and not having anything to prove might actually serve him well in his relationship with Tomlin and Arthur Smith and how this whole thing works.
Yeah, I think it's certainly more cut and dried, and I think you can look back on what happened with Justin Fields and sort of read into that and say, you know what, maybe that was part of the reason they didn't want to go for $40 million over 2 years. They didn't want to be tied to him, beyond a season, if they were definitely going to draft a quarterback in 2026, which I think we all realize is something that's definitely on their agenda. They want to accomplish that, next spring. So, you know, when you look at what Justin got and you look at what Aaron got, in terms of guaranteed money, I can't remember exactly what Justin got, but I think it's over $20 million. And then you look at Aaron Rodgers, like 10 or 13, depending on what happens during the season. I think this was definitely the way to go if Aaron was going to be the guy, and obviously he finally made that call.
I know that Fields was well-regarded by his teammates last year. It was just obvious that Tomlin, saw him still as a very young player and just couldn't trust him enough with what he had done, and that's why he went with Russell Wilson. And I am going to ask you here, Ray, to kind of make an evaluation, and I know it's not on stuff that's on the field, but I will concede that Rodgers, when he's, forget about all the other stuff away from football that he talks about, but when he talks about actually being a teammate, I will concede that he sounds a lot more authentic and believable, that he is a good guy in that room, that he likes working with these guys, that he's excited to work with Arthur Smith, than I feel like Russell Wilson ever did. So how do you evaluate what I'm kind of bringing up there?
Yeah, I honestly didn't get the sense that Russ's personality was a huge issue in that locker room last season. I just think he played bad at the end of the season. But when you talk about Aaron, you never hear really a lot of complaints among his teammates about him being a leader or the type of person that he is in the locker room. I know that situation with Mike Williams unfolded last year, but if you look at the big picture and over the course of his two decades in the NFL, that was more of a one-off than that's something that took place year after year after year, especially when he was in Green Bay. So. Yeah, I think this has a chance to work out, both for Aaron, who, as you mentioned, wants to finish his career on a better note than what he had in New York. And then most importantly, obviously, for the Steelers, a team that's looking to get back to the playoffs, but not only get back there, but to finally, if not win a game, put up a showing that is, halfway respectable, which I don't think they've done here in the last few attempts once they got to the postseason.
Post-Gazette Steelers beat writer Ray Fittipaldo joining us on the PM team. Ray, who needs a playoff win? Let's just say that. Let's call a successful season a playoff win, which honestly seems like their tacit admission that they would call that a success internally. Who needs it more this year, Aaron Rodgers or Mike Tomlin?
Well, it's got to be Mike Tomlin. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a first ballot Hall of Famer no matter what happens this year. He's going to get that gold jacket 5 years after he retires. Mike Tomlin, I think, is a Hall of Famer, too. I think he's a shoo-in, but, his legacy, especially if he continues to coach for many years beyond this, his legacy has been somewhat, I'm not going to say tarnished, but I think there's, a little bit more nuance to it after the last 10 or so years than there was when he was winning Super Bowls and getting the Super Bowls in his first five seasons in the league. So. Yeah, I would say 100% Mike Tomlin. It would be nice if Aaron Rodgers could do that in his final NFL season, but I don't think his legacy or anything like that hinges upon it.
Ray, if Rodgers, say, doesn't get the Steelers to the playoffs, or if he does, but it looks much like you described these last several appearances where they're not really competitive, let's say, and so just in many ways this coming season resembles very closely so many of the previous ones, that would be, by my count, if you start with Mitch Trubisky and move forward through Rodgers, six quarterbacks that would have gotten a crack at this job in one form or fashion that ultimately all did not work out. If that's the case, how much do you think that would erode Art Rooney II's confidence in Mike Tomlin's ability to correctly identify a player at that position, since they do want to draft one next year?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, you're right. They had the situation in 2022 that was – really bad from the start. You bench Mitch Trubisky after four games, and you go with a rookie after not giving him a lot of reps in training camp. So yeah, I would be with you, and I think Art would certainly agree with you on that. But it doesn't change the fact that Mike Tomlin has 2 years left on his contract, and he's going to be owed about $30 million over those 2 years. I think the pressure, honestly, at that point, goes on to Andy Weidel and to Omar Khan to identify that guy. And I know Mike's going to be involved. He's going to be super involved once the season ends. But there are so many good quarterbacks coming out in this draft. Andy and Omar are going to be on the road a ton, starting in August, looking at all these guys, trying to figure out where they stack. And then when Mike and Arthur Smith jump in after the season, they'll have a better idea on who they want to look at closer, and it'll be well organized for them. So, I do agree with you, but I think, whether it's fair or unfair, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Omar and Andy to identify those guys to get them stacked for Mike when he does step into that process.
So that's an interesting dynamic that you present here, Ray, just laying it out in specific terms. Then who do you think will have more influence on who ultimately they do draft as their next quarterback, Omar and Andy, by filtering out maybe some of the guys that they just say no way to, that maybe Tomlin, if he saw that player more, might like? or Tomlin at the end of the day and Rooney being heavily involved in that decision on draft night?
I think it's got to be like a unanimous thing on draft night. It's got to be Mike, it's got to be Andy and Omar, and it's got to be Arthur Second. You know, they all have to be on the same page, and we all know what Mike likes. You know, he wants that mobile quarterback who's going to be able to do damage with his legs and also, you know, be a factor in the passing game. You know, fortunately for Mike, there's a lot of those guys in those drafts, you know, to varying degrees. You know, I think, you know, Sellers is probably the one.
That's my guy, Ray. That's my guy. That's the one. Sellers is my pick.
He's probably the most dual threat among all those guys, but all those guys can move. I mean, you're not playing at an elite level in college now unless you could at least do some of those things. Like even Arch Manning, I mean, that guy's a good runner, so he would fit in with the way NFL teams want to play as well. So, Mike knows exactly what he wants in a quarterback, so he's going to be involved. But I think Andy and Omar are going to have a big say in that as well.
All right, how about a couple quick hitters, Ray? You ready to end here? Just a couple very fast answer questions. More rushing yards in 2025, Caleb Johnson or Jaylen Warren?
I'll go with Jaylen Warren.
Will the Steelers' second leading wide receiver by yardage, basically we'll call it, be a guy who is currently on the – and it can't be Freiermuth because I mean strictly wide receiver. Will it be a guy who's currently on the roster right now or somebody still not with the team?
Yes, I'll go with Calvin Austin. He had like 550 last year. I think he'll get above 600 this year.
Well, that would be pretty good for Calvin Austin. T.J. Watt, I believe it was 11.5 sacks last year for T.J. Watt. His career high in sacks in one season, of course, is 22.5. So I will try to set a good over-under for him coming off of his worst full season of production. Over under, and we hold you very firmly to these predictions you make in late June, Ray. I want you to know that.
Okay.
Over under 14.5 sacks for TJ Watt next year.
Oh, my number was going to be 16, so I will go over, Chris.
And the last one that I have for you, I was on a Milwaukee radio station earlier this week, and they gave me one of these over unders that was wild when I heard it. The over-under for Aaron Rodgers' passing yards that this guy cited at whatever local casino they have was, I believe, something like 3,200. They might have said it at like 3,199.5.
Yeah.
Over or under that total? Because when I heard him say that, I was like, over, unless he gets hurt. What say you?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's my first thought as well. Unless he gets injured, 3,200 for as much as they're going to pass. I mean, you heard what Arthur Smith said. They didn't bring him in here to run the wishbone. So they are going to be a passing team this year, and I think over 3,200 would be a good bet if you place that down at Rivers today.
Ray Fittipaldo, Steelers beat writer for the PG. As always, Ray, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Talk to you later.
That 3,200 number, Don, isn't that something? Very bizarre. I didn't check to cross-check that against all the other numbers or casinos and what they're offering on Aaron Rodgers' passing totals, but if this guy up in Milwaukee was correct, that seems like a wildly low number for a guy that better be passing the ball if they're going to win this, any kind of significant amount of games this year.
Yeah, that's pretty much counting on him to get hurt, miss like
right,
at least 4 to 6 games.
That's what I said. That assumes an injury, which is pretty wild.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'll tell you right now that 93.7 The Fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball and softball showcase presented by Sheetz. Parents and coaches, send an email to us at youthsports@937thefan.com to register your 12 and under team, and 93.7 The Fan may make a stop to your field. Details, of course, at 937thefan.com. And that's all brought to you by Keystone Custom Apparel. All right, Don, here we are. It's 5:30, so the voting's got to stop. The NHL draft has pulled the upset. in what was a very close race here for Total Request Thursday. You pick the topic that we talk about at 5:30. You get to make your vote count. We had the following choices: Aaron Rodgers, Pirates at the halfway point, NHL draft, and The Simpsons. Pirates at the halfway point, 20.1% of the vote. Aaron Rodgers, 22.3% of the vote. The Simpsons, 26.8% of the vote, but winning with 30.7% of the vote was the NHL draft, which usually was met with little fanfare here during the height of the Jim Rutherford years, and even beyond that, once Ron Hextall took over to drive this thing into the ground, because the Penguins basically never had first-round picks. They have two tomorrow night, 11 and 12 back-to-back. I will let you lead this dance a little bit. You had Jesse Marshall on. He's awesome. I can take credit for Jesse getting his start as a radio guest. He has been a big-time hockey guy for a very long time for a variety of outlets. I think the one that he was technically writing for that he had probably started, I think, himself when I put him on the first time was called Faceoff Factor. What was your biggest takeaway, Don, from what Jesse said last night when you had him on to talk about the draft?
I know a few people have speculated the possibility of the Penguins now having these two picks. Will they try to make a move up in this draft? Jesse didn't really indicate that. He didn't see this as the type of year that they should be doing that. He said outside of the first two picks, outside of the top two prospects, and you hear this a lot with the NHL draft, outside of the top two guys, it's a crapshoot.
Total crapshoot, yep.
And it wouldn't really be advantageous of the Penguins to just make a jump up just to do it, because there's not really that generational player in this draft to do so. So I would say that they're going to stand pat at 11 and 12 unless they really love somebody who falls close to them.
I'll tell you this much. I mean, given where they're at and given their need to, and I know anybody that falls in that range in the NHL, it can take a couple of years for them to get there, and then there's hardly a guarantee that once they get there, they're a big impact player. Like you just said, it's a crapshoot for a reason. They need to stockpile young players who are just good. I mean, that's the way this is going to happen. So I would rather see them take two cracks at it back-to-back and get two players they like, and hopefully have both of the, you know, you hit on both of those if you're them. I mean, the Panthers are back-to-back champs. Did Jesse give you any major names that you should watch for at 11 and 12 that jump out to him as good fits for the Penguins?
So the first one he gave, which I assume is who he would like at number 11, is Victor Eklund, a forward from Sweden. And the next guy that he gave is Kashawn Aitchison. I don't know if I think I'm saying it right.
I think you are, yeah. I know it's Kashawn, and I think I said Aitchison yesterday, but it's Aitchison.
Yeah, who is a Canadian defenseman. Now, something he preached about both of these guys was their physical demeanor on the ice. Like he made it very clear in his answer about both guys using the word physical multiple times. So I don't know if that is just his personal preference of, hey, I want to see them get a couple of physical guys here who, yeah, they're not going to make an impact immediately, but they just need that in the pipeline, or if he has some sort of indication that that's the direction they'll go. But those were the two top names that he gave for me.
I do think from reading some of what Josh Yoey has written that they absolutely have this impetus. They're not being as like psycho about it as when it was Brian Burke and he was talking about being more truculent and all this stuff, but they definitely want to be more physical. I think Josh wrote something, and I'm paraphrasing here, but I think pretty close to the mark, that essentially teams like the Lightning and especially the Panthers, they're big and they're physical and they're very tough to play against, and they're kind of relentless. And he said a team like the Penguins is essentially on the small side, not physical, and pretty easy to play against. So it seems obvious that rebuild is centered around not getting, like, you know, tough guys necessarily, but big guys and guys who play that style that you just laid out there. So I'm not remotely surprised to see that. This at Aitchison has me intrigued just because he just reminds me right down to being a left shot, probably ideally a second pair defenseman, which, hey, if you get a solid second pair defenseman out of an 11th overall pick in what is not a generational or loaded draft, I'd say that's pretty good. He just reminds me of Brooks Orpik, man, who was a fan favorite for just basically clobbering people and being a really responsible player. I'd also say that you need somebody whose instincts and, you know, maybe almost first and second instincts are to stay at home on defense, because we know that this team is going to be built off, like, no matter what Dubas wants to do, somehow in their DNA they will always be trying to attack and go up the ice, because that's what they've been in perpetuity, I would say, since at least in my lifetime, and even really before they drafted Lemieux. So you do need, I think, a healthy quotient of players who are willing to stay in their own end and try to insulate any goalie that they're going to put back there. I was trying to get a sense, this website Pensburg, one of the many Penguins blogs that are out there, back in 2023 they tried to do a deep dive on all of Dubas's drafts, and what they found, and I'll summarize it, was essentially a lot of forwards early. He definitely believes in taking a goalie in most drafts. Not a ton of noteworthy names necessarily when he was with the Leafs, but he likes to take forwards more early on, and the defensemen seem to come a little bit later. And so I think we're going to see he would be maybe bucking a trend. Let me put it this way. I would expect one forward, one defenseman from 11 and 12 if he doesn't move with one of those picks. That's what I would say. I almost feel like that's the responsible way to do it. He can't just go all offense here. Their defense corps is so bad and was so bad this year. And they've got young, promising guys. Brunick, obviously, is the right-handed shot defenseman that I think they're really high on. They've got so many guys, though, that really did not play well last year, that I would add defensive talent there. And specifically defensive talent, Don, that is actually committed to playing defense.
Yeah, that's so. Kind of the same indication that Jesse gave. Unless they would get to 11 and 12 and there were just two forwards that they were in love with. But he seemed to give the indication it'll be at least one defenseman out of those two picks.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.